Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Toronto, Canada, and earned a BSCE in Applied Science Mechanical Engineering from Queen's University, and an MBA in Strategic Management from the Wharton School of Business. After working for Magna International for 5 years, he then became a consultant with McKinsey & Company. Since 2006, he's been the managing director of the automotive practice for Alex Partners. His name, Mark Wakefield, and we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Mark Wakefield, the managing director of the automotive practice for Alex Partners. Mark, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thanks. It's an honor to be here.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please?
Sure. My childhood, as you said, is in Canada. As a Canadian, so as a proud Canadian, I've been on all coasts. So I grew up mostly in Toronto. That was home base. But also grew up a bit in Vancouver and in Montreal. So in U.S. terms, that would be growing up in Chicago with a bit of New Orleans and a bit of Portland, Oregon thrown in there. So, a great start to it, and wonderful family. My father was a hardworking executive at a bank. So he became the president of a company called Wood Gundy. It's a bank and a money management firm in Canada, and that took him around Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, the big cities. My mom was more the heart of the household and gave me the moral center of it all. My father was more the business person, and I hope I'm a combination of the best of both.
Speaking of the best of both, what's the biggest thing you learned from Dad, and what's the biggest thing you learned from Mom?
The biggest thing from my father was just how much energy he can take from meeting and empathy and getting to be friends with people. He is one of these guys that becomes friends with someone within minutes of everyone and will always take the extra time with a waiter, with the clerk checking in. You basically got to plan double whatever you're going to do because he's going to make 10 best friends along that day. And the not just the power of it in terms of it doing good things in the world, but also what it does back for him. It gives him energy, but it also makes life easy to be nice and interested in people. And that was probably what I took from him. From my mother, who actually was on her way to becoming a nun before she went into undergraduate university, is this absolute sense of right and wrong, and that there is no gray zone. You know what's right, and you know what's right in a big picture way, and you also don't need dogmatic lessons. You know, as a nun would probably terrify the odd priest on in pushing back on dogma. She would push back on any sort of movement outside of the black and white and into the gray zone of right and wrong.
What were your interests as a kid, Mark?
Loved sports, did them all as a Canadian, of course. Play hockey. This isn't my real tooth. Another present from hockey. So, you know, played hockey in Canada all through growing up, and that was in Canada quite a big deal. My high school, for example, had two arenas and no gymnasium. Just as an example of Canadiana there for you. A lot of sports, sailing, hockey, rugby, tennis, this sort of thing. And I enjoyed computer games, enjoyed comics as any kid does, but really also enjoyed, as we moved around, to experience the difference of being in Montreal, a French-speaking area, being in Vancouver, which has got the nickname of Van Groovy, as you might imagine, the San Francisco and Portland types, and then, you know, the big city of Toronto.
You got a BSCE in Applied Science Mechanical Engineering from Queen's University.
Yeah.
And then you go to this Wharton School of Business.
Yeah.
that everybody hears about. What makes it so special? Why so unique?
It's hard to know if it's unique because you don't go to two schools. So you can't tell what a Harvard or a Stanford was like. But Wharton was fantastic. The quality of people there, the diversity of those people. I chose it to try to see what else is out there outside of automotive. I'd come from Magna, very engineering, plant, automotive experience. And Wharton, among the good MBA schools, probably has the least automotive people in it. And so this would be fantastic. I'll get to go see what else is out there. Similarly, with going to McKinsey afterwards in a consulting firm was another chance to say, let's see what else is out there. But I quickly discovered the love of automotive brings me back.
Where did you get that love of automotive?
I don't know. I think it might have been even starting in the sailing. The idea of having to learn about the forces on a sail and how it really works was fantastic to me. And then in undergraduate engineering, being able to actually visualize what happens with the math versus an electrical or some other type of engineering that's, you can't really visualize, or I can't visualize what's exactly happening in chemical or in electrical, but in mechanical, I can really visualize the forces and all of the things that are happening. And so that gave me a real interest in the hard part of it. And then the heart part of it, the fascination with automotive, I just loved cars. I loved driving cars, loved fixing cars, building up my own, racing cars. And so I have a passion for it. When you got a passion for something, it gives you that extra competitive edge. When I'm talking about a little part, I've actually, out of interest, looked at a whole bunch of other parts like that, just because I'm curious about it. Whereas if someone's just doing it as a job, they don't have that extra curiosity where they're just fanatically interested in the industry.
We're talking to Mark Wakefield. When we come back, we'll ask him about his chapter in his life with Magna International. And I'm Jack Brasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula. We're with Mark Wakefield, who from 1995 to 1999 was a senior program manager with Magna International. Tell us about Magna International.
Well, Magna's a fantastic company. And when I'm hiring people, I actually look for people who have started and had a foundational experience in a good company, because then they get to know what makes a company good. And it's not being good at everything. And Magna was very good at a few things, and everyone knew it. And so the people in there were fantastic. I worked initially for a general manager named Richard Wilson, who was one of the best managers I've ever worked with, and learned a ton from him. But from, you know, Frank Stronach and Don Walker on down to everyone I worked with daily, people have this view of how to run and how not to run. So we had these three legs of a stool that Frank Stronach had to be able to sit on: employee satisfaction, customer satisfaction, and return on funds employed. And you had to pass these hurdles as a plant or as a business to be able to get more cash and grow and basically keep your job. You also had to get that to be eligible for bonuses. Not many people made much in a salary. Most of it was in a bonus. And it was based on first passing these hurdles, then getting this bonus. So the level of entrepreneurialism that drove, but also the level of everyone's playing the same book. We want to be the best at making parts, the best at processing. And it was really a fantastic learning experience, because I wasn't designing a bolt for a year. I was doing all of the business pieces.
God has really blessed you with letting you live in some world-class cities, your parents, and also working with some phenomenal entrepreneurs, and one, Frank Stronach. Tell us about the iconic Mr. Stronach.
Sure. I mean, I was a peon at the time, but we were all exposed to Frank's vision and how Frank picked people. So I don't know him very well, but in my experiences with him, it's been amazing that both he and Don Walker, the CEO, always immediately knew my name and remembered it. And the things that seemed to be that seemed to make the two of them work really well together, plus the CFO and a few others, is they weren't the same type of people. So he surrounded himself with people that were different from him, and he had a real nose for people, and then a real nose for taking risks and a big vision of how to move a ball forward. And he surrounded himself with a lot of people that could then execute on that. He might not have actually known how to work all the way along a process. He knew the start and the end, and he was able to assemble the right team, motivate them in the right way to have them move from point A to point B.
For the last 25 years, you've worked for and with a lot of automotive suppliers. What do all great suppliers have in common, Mark?
They have in common, first of all, a management team where if I sit in front of a management team or sit in front of each one and I talk to them and each one gives me a similar story about what the company is good at and what they're just good enough at, and the same story from everyone, and it's not rehearsed, then it's a really good supplier because the team is together and they know what they're really doing and how they're competing. Where you talk to one guy and he talks about IT and the next guy and he talks about efficient supply chains and the next guy talks about the balance sheet, then you know you've just talked to the head of IT, head of purchasing, and so on, and the CFO. And that's the sign of a supplier that may be average, may be okay, but is not a winning supplier.
From 2001 to 2003, you worked with and for McKinsey & Company.
Yeah.
Talk about that chapter of your life.
Diametrically opposed to a Magna environment where it's entrepreneurial, it was a very much a re-architecting of a thought process from being an engineer and being entrepreneurial into being very process-based and very hypothesis-driven. So an engineer might be deductive and go try to figure out stuff and put it all together and say, therefore, this. In consulting, you're trained to say, no, inductively, I think it could be this, and what needs to be true for this to be true? Rather than boiling the ocean, I'm just going to go figure out those couple things, and then if those things are true, then this is true and I have my answer, rather than boiling the ocean. And that skill set and a number of these consulting toolkits that you pick up are enormously beneficial, particularly when you've got the operational and business mindset from the Magna side, and putting those two together has been really powerful for me.
In 2006, you join another world-class entrepreneur who has a company by the name of Alex Partners. Why did you join them?
It was a fantastic opportunity because it's a combination of both of those two worlds. The world where you're in there at the table and you've either got the keys or you're a peer trying to make something happen, and you're using the consulting toolkit and using and seeing a lot of different problems along the way. They had a different consulting model at the time, and we still do, of not having a lot of young people just right out of MBA. Instead, we've got people that have had real experience in business, real consulting training, and we put that together in an experienced model. And Alex's foresight to see that model that he'd started in a restructuring world could work so well in a management consulting world, which is now the majority of our business. We only do 15-20% of our work is really restructuring. It's healthy companies management consulting. And his vision to be able to see that this different model of, instead of a pyramid of young people then getting to be partners, but people who know what they're doing can work together as a team and cut to the chase faster and see it through to getting implemented, was really attractive because it put those two pieces together. The experience I'd seen in consulting, the experience I'd seen in industry, perfectly.
Tell us about Jay Alex.
Jay is a fantastic person. I mean, you saw the Mayo Clinic gift just recently. Fantastic heart to do that.
The gift, $200 million, Mr. Blackwell. $200 million. $1,000.
Yeah, fantastic. And not just the money, but also his time and energy to help that organization. I mean, he's learned from that organization, as he tells us all the time, but he's also really leaned in and helped that organization professionalize. But he's a fantastic person because he's one of those guys that you can trust to the end of the world. Like, you know, we all knew that he had our backs and he was interested in us. And he had a philosophy that if you do good things come back to you, basically. And he did enough of those good things that it's very credible. And so the people around him trust him to do the right thing, even if it's not spelled out, even if it's not in certain contract, that he would do the right thing by them and someone you can follow.
Let's go back 10 years. General Motors was in trouble.
Yes.
And certain people were saying they should file bankruptcy. And the prevailing thought was that you can't. People won't buy any cars from you if you file bankruptcy. And on Sunday, November 23rd, 2008, 10 years ago, Mark, Jay Alex calls Rick Wagner on a Sunday, says, can I come over for some tea and cookies with you and Kathy? What happened?
He'd actually been working with Rick, even before that, talking about how to help Rick and help GM through this period. And because they saw some of this coming, or the potential for this to be coming. And certainly Jay did. And Jay really cared about Rick and cared about how to help this company through. At the time, he had backed away a bit from, he still had a significant ownership piece, but he'd backed away a bit from Alex Partners. This was him coming back in to the role of helping companies. And it was really fantastic, the ideas that and the confidence that he brought to create an approach of good company, bad company, and the ability to use the 363 part of the bankruptcy law started with him and a lawyer as well, that were pushing this idea as basically a plan B. Plan A was to get money from the government, do the operational restructuring and such, but it was far from a done deal, and so they needed a really credible plan B. And Jay's approach, along with partners in the law firms, really helped crystallize and, I think, give GM and give Rick the confidence to see that through.
So starting in 2008, you guys were doing bankruptcy, M&A, restructuring, which is now only 15% of your services. What's the majority of your time spent now?
The majority is using that same approach from the bankruptcy side of a peer at the table, an expert, but a real partner, and doing it to healthy companies, but aspirational companies. So still there's sometimes that companies that have their back against the wall, but there's other companies that are aspirational. They want to do a lot better, quantumly better. They don't want to just do a little bit better. And they don't want to be just confirmed. So we don't like our results to be a report or paper. We want our results to be working with a company to make a meaningful difference. Sometimes that's where is point B and helping them through to point B. Sometimes they've got a pretty clear view of where point B is and just need help to get there. But that extra horsepower to get them, say it's a car and it's at a stop, getting them to the highway speed takes extra power. Once you're at the highway speed, if you've built the enough sustainability, it can keep going at that. But it does take that extra power to make that first initial boost, and that's where we come in.
We're talking to Mark Wakefield, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasula. We're with Mark Wakefield since 2006. He's been the managing director of the automotive practice for Alex Partners. Mark, What does the managing director of the automotive practice for Alex Partners do all day?
Well, I started actually as a vice president, then going up to being the managing director of it. Spent time actually in Tokyo in between for a few years. But the time as a consultant before being the managing director, the time in Japan, and the time now running the practice has been quite different, but always half of the time has been the same, which is focused on clients, focused on helping some company move forward. So right now we're working with a transmission company, a plastic injection molding company, an OEM, spending most of my time with the transmission company, helping them double in size, helping them grow an innovation pipeline, helping them grow their team and expand and become global. And I guess no day is quite the same as the last, but we're helping each company achieve something that they couldn't achieve by themselves. And that means sometimes you're doing a very long process and a very thorough, rigorous one. And other times a grenade has just rolled past you on the floor and you got to jump on it and you got to help people put those fires out and get back on track.
If you want to learn more, www.alixpartners.com. Mark, you're very young. You were born in 1974.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure you remember the famous commercial, "When E.F. Hutton talks, people listen." Maybe you were too young. But for the last dozen years, when you talk or write, people in the automotive industry listen. So let's talk about some of the geniuses in this industry.
Yeah.
Rick Wagner.
Yeah. Fantastic guy to get them through that period. And selfless towards the end, but just one of the smartest people you'll ever meet. He had the foresight, one of the driving forces to move GM to go into China as aggressively they did, well before many people really had made that attempt, and it proved to be a fantastic bet on where that would go. He was trying to get through before the recession happened by having enough throughput and volume and keeping plants running to have basically to get in front of that bow wave of retirees. Unfortunately, with the depth of that recession, that didn't work out.
Ellen Mullally.
Alan Mullally, I'd never worked with directly, so it's more from observing him as a fantastic and meeting him a number of times. But seeing what he did with Ford, what a fantastic communicator and what a fantastic sense of where a team should go and pulling people together out of the silos into one team to go forward to achieve one goal. Just a fantastic leader, fantastic communicator.
The late, great Sergio Marchionne.
Oh, equal parts terrifying and inspiring at the same time. So much fun to work with. The whole team there is so much fun to work with because they had that spark of how to do things fast. The speed at which he was able to move them towards certain decisions was great, and it really was an easy place to get the right thing done because you've got one person to basically get through, and he's a smart guy, like all of them, extremely smart guy that could get to the nugget really quick. Sometimes things you hadn't thought of, and you go, oh, I guess we haven't thought of that all the way through. But other times, just an impressively convinced guy of we need to really understand this, have some conviction, have some pride. And when he got to FCA, or when he got first to Fiat, that pride had really come down quite a bit. And he brought back a lot of that pride, not just by bluster, but by his decisions and leadership and force of will.
We're talking to Mark Wakefield. Mark, the recent announcement by GM of the plant shutdowns and layoffs, almost 15,000 workers, 15% of it domestic workforce. What does that really tell us?
Well, it's part of a broader story, so you need to be careful not to read into it one company or one or the economy. What's happening in the auto industry is we've got a big change going on, and a couple big changes going on. We've got new aspects of the business. We call them CASE, so connected, autonomous, shared mobility, electrification, that are all completely new. They're moving the business in a way that's not just the next version of the truck, the next version of the car. This is really incremental. And they also change the business models in those areas. And companies need to readjust to be able to do those. At the same time, you've seen a big segment shift from the car to the SUV. Particularly, midsize SUVs have gone up. The trucks and pickup trucks have sort of floated along with housing starts and such, but mid-size SUVs, that segment has exploded. The trouble is you don't make a plant to make vehicles, you make a plant to make a specific vehicle. And so when you combine some of these things that are on the horizon, autonomous vehicles, electrification, your current workforce and your current infrastructure isn't geared towards that, and you need to re-gear towards that. And that applies to all OEMs. At the same time, you've got a shift from cars, particularly out of large cars, and even out of large SUVs into mid-size SUVs. And you've got to retool your plants to do those things as well.
You mentioned the acronym CASE,
yes.
E being electrification. Are we going to go that route? Some say absolutely. Others say it's just throwing money down the drain. What's going to happen?
Both. So it will absolutely be going towards that. It
makes
a lot of
sense. You are a consultant, you know.
Well, I'm going to say both, but not that it's they aren't conflicting. The issue is that they're too expensive now, and we're still in the beginning part of it. So they aren't cost competitive for most applications with an existing gasoline or diesel-powered car, or even a hybrid. So, but the cost curve is going down pretty fast. And it has gone down really fast over the last decade as volumes come up as well as the science gets better. So I have no question that it's moving that way and will move that way, will continue to move that way. Whether the fuel source, though, is hydrogen or battery power or something else that's driving the electric motor, I believe there will be electric motors and much, much more. However, right now, it's a fraction of the market because it's too expensive. There's some other things as well, but it's generally too expensive. And so this is that challenge that industry participants are in, where it's, I know it's happening, I just don't know when, and it's not happening in big amounts now. But if I don't get on that generational path to get better and better, I'm going to be launching something where someone else has defined the market. The Toyota Prius defined the hybrid market. It may not be the only way to do a hybrid, but for a long time, people said, oh, you do one too, even if it was a completely different version. And they compared it against the Prius and its strengths, so the miles per gallon. And you might make a big SUV that has fantastic mileage for the size of it, but compared to a Prius, the mileage didn't sound so impressive. That's the danger if people don't get into the electric vehicle game. Someone else defines it, and someone else gets ahead of them on the generational curve, and that's a problem. The problem being that the money you put into it now, you won't have a great profitable business tomorrow in it.
We're talking to Mark Wakefield. When we come back, we're going to ask him about autonomous vehicles. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WGR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Mark Wakefield with Alex Partners. Mark, we hear so much about driverless technology. How close are we? And who will be some of the winners?
Well, it's a fantastic technology. And it's not just one technology. There's lots of different ways to skin the cat. But basically, having it less and less manually driven and more things automatically going on in the vehicle. So it can go all the way to the vehicle driving itself, or it can just be helpers, or what we call ADAS, Advanced Driver Assistance Systems, that aren't fully capable of driving a vehicle, but really help you along the way. And these are interesting technologies because a lot of the other safety technologies that have come into automotive have been regulated in. And this one has its own pull in. There is some regulation in some of the ADAS things, but it's really having its own pull. And the interesting piece that everyone talks about is what happens when you really do get a driverless vehicle, because it's like, you know, an iPhone competing against a BlackBerry when the first iPhone came out. It's a platform for dramatically changing the business model that you're in. It's almost hard to imagine all the things that will change, because really everything can change when vehicles can go around autonomously. There's a long way to go between then and now, though, and even the Society of Automotive Engineers has these levels of 1 to 5 of how autonomous it gets. It's not even that helpful because in reality, the vehicles will be autonomous in certain geofenced locations. So think of it like going into a parking lot and having it park itself. There's the degrees of freedom on that are pretty slim because you're and the error is pretty low cost because the vehicle's going really slow. So it can sense things, it can check and redundancy, and it can park itself without a lot of drama on a highway. You might think cars are going fast, this is dangerous, but it's actually a lot simpler for a vehicle than a city street because you've got lines that are nice and straight. You've got only a certain amount of weird things happen on a highway compared to a city street. So you'll see things like that a lot sooner. Then you start seeing closed environments like a college campus, a military base. Then you see certain routes going that it's all well mapped out. The vehicle to the infrastructure is connected. The vehicle to the vehicle is connected. And it's well mapped out in multiple different sensors how it's going. So you'll see those pieces go in. And so a vehicle might be totally manual driving around downtown, then somewhat assisted on the highway, then completely autonomous in the parking lot or when you get to the college campus, that same vehicle. So we've really got to see that. That's the near term. The longer term of something where hands off, eyes off, someone drunk in the seat and not able to take control or incapacitated, that's further out because those vehicles, even with the remote control by a central controller able to basically pipe in and be able to control the vehicle, that's a long way off. There's a lot of liability there. So it's still a bit of a longer way off. And that's the...
Speaking of a long way off, paint for us a picture in 2030 of driving and mobility.
Driving and mobility. So it depends on the country and the place that you're in, but people with disabilities, younger people having more access to mobility, the time a car stays unutilized will be much less. Now it's more than 90% of the time. The car just sits there. So the cost of each mile of transportation will be starting to fall because we'll be starting to really see these... this iPhone moment of new opportunities coming up. So you'll see a much lower net cost of the mile traveled. I don't say driven because it could be driven, it could be traveled. And a lot of different business models where you, instead of everyone owning something, I think back to the 1920s, everybody owned a vehicle and paid cash for it. Then you get into financing, then leasing, now car sharing and ride hailing. We're going more and more and more towards just paying for the mobility that we want in each segment of A to B mobility. And we'll see a lot more of that.
Mark Wakefield, you're intensely curious. You have a childlike curiosity. How did you get that? And most importantly, how do I get that?
Do what you're passionate at. And I don't know where... That's a tough question. It's a very good question. But it's a tough one to answer because it's more of an outcome, right? I hope my kids are intensely curious. Sometimes they're a little too curious for their own good. But that's a tough one to answer. But I think you have to have an interest and passion. You have to enjoy what you're doing you have to have a sense of things can always be improved and better, and there's more out there. But that's a tough one. I don't know the recipe for switching that on.
We had Daron Levine a few months ago, and he said, if the truth be known, Jack, several Chinese companies are further along than we are in this whole electrified vehicle, autonomous. What are your thoughts?
On electrification, the Chinese market is well ahead. They're being driven very centrally, and that's helped them a tremendous amount. They have cities that are outlawing combustion-driven vehicles, and a lot of government attention towards winning in the electric vehicle market. In the autonomous vehicle market, they have a few consortiums that are put together to try to develop those, but it doesn't look like they are ahead of a couple U.S.-based companies. So I would say the answer differs, electrification versus autonomous. You still, though, have Tesla with the most amount of vehicle miles driven on electric and vehicle miles sold. We look at something called our electrification index that allows us to compare one vehicle with another by using the number of miles that the vehicle can drive on electric and stacking those up. So kind of like you would say, how many batteries did you sell? No, how much power did you sell? Or power capability did you sell? How many electric miles did you sell? And Tesla is still far and away above everybody else.
As our time winds down together this evening, Mark, what advice would you give to our young listeners?
Be confident in staying to what you feel is right. There can be pressure to do what in engineering we call local maximums instead of global maximums in statistical terms. And look for the global maximum. Look for what's right. Not just what's right for one or two people, or your side, not their side. Look for what's right, do what's right, and then, as my family motto is, be just and fear not.
You are just and you fear not. You're a class act and a real asset to our community. Keep up the great, great work.
Thank you, Jack.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spawn.
Believe in yourself.